Hello everybody, my name is Bogdan Duda, I'm a PhD student at Texas Tech, and I'm gonna speak a bit today about my latest project, which is the external parameter orthogonalization of Eastern European visible near-infrared diffuse reflectance spectroscopy soul spectra. So, we talked a lot about today, about proximal sensors, so I guess everybody in the room knows they're rapidly gaining popularity for soil science due to a lot of factors like the easiness of data acquisition, the robust data you get with it, the low cost per samples, alacrity, and a lot more like non-destructiveness of the samples. So again, a lot of studies have shown that VisNIR DRS can successfully quantify soil properties like total and organic carbon, total nitrogens, and then clay content, CEC, pH, and so on and so forth. The problem we're trying to address here is exactly what you said in your first presentation, that the moisture effect has an effect on proximal sensors. Not so much on the PXRF, but on the visible near-infrared. If you try to scan samples or soil in situ, you will have a big influence of moisture, which will cause a prediction model instability. And the second problem we wanted to address is mostly the existing spectral libraries that are there already, have been developed using samples that were dried and ground. Again, in situ you will have a different aggregation and a different moisture. So, Eastern Europe, I'm from Romania. Proximal sensors in Eastern Europe have been used very rarely. Most of the applications were done by Dr. Winder's team. The world, Europe, Romania, and Bulgaria, the two countries we chose as representative for Eastern Europe. Our samples covered a wide range of soil types. We had landslides, forests, coastal areas. And I'm going to talk a bit about how we collected the data. So in July of 2015, we chose three catenas around the county of Cluj, where I'm from, and we collected 100 samples from each of the catenas, so 100 samples per catena. Another 200 samples were collected next year in June of 2016, and then we came from Cluj all the way south. We went to Constanța, where there's coastal plains, and north of Bulgaria. Why we did it in separate sets is because the first time we collected from the catenas, we actually scanned with the VisNIR in situ, so different aggregation and moisture, and then we sent it back to the lab, dried it, grinded it. Whereas for the second data set, which covered the rest of Romania and Bulgaria, we actually shipped the samples back, dried them, grind them, scanned them dry, and then re-wetted them, scanned them again. So the objectives of this study were to evaluate if the EPO-PLS can effectively remove the moisture effect from the spectra while predicting clay content using both the field intact cores and the legacy re-wetted samples. And the second objective was to assess the potential of the EPO for variable wetting of ground samples. So we sampled from the mineral soil surface from up to 5 centimeter depth, as I said, in June 2015 and July of 2016. So in total we had 450 samples collected from Romania and an additional 50 samples from northern Bulgaria. The samples were dried and placed into sealed plastic jars, and then we shipped them to Texas Tech. Upon arrival at Texas Tech, all the samples were ground and sieved to pass a 2 millimeter sieve. I was not as lucky as the previous speaker, so I actually had to do particle size analysis for 500 samples by the traditional way, and doing a modified hydrometer method with clay readings at 24 hours and 10% validation. And for a select number of samples, 10 of them, we did mineralogy by X-ray diffraction. We actually had two EPO approaches, and I'm gonna explain to you why we chose two. But in order to do that, I'm gonna explain how we splitted the data. So we had the development data for the EPO creation, which was composed of 150 samples. Basically, I took all 500 samples. I ordered them from lowest to highest clay content. I divided the 500 samples into 10 strata and then randomly selected 15 samples from each of the strata. So 150 samples. The validation data set was done from the remaining 350 samples by randomly selecting 100, and the rest were used for creating the calibration set. The second approach, we have the same structure of the data, but for the development set of the EPO, we chose 150 samples from only the non-intact, basically from the samples we collected the second time, which were not scanned in the field. So this was the whole development set for the EPO2 was created using data which was re-wetted in the lab and then scanned. So we did this in order to evaluate if the projection matrix generated for the second EPO would work as well as the first one for re-wetted samples. The device we used for the experiment was a spectral evolution PSR3500 VisNIR spectroradiometer. The reflectance data was resampled at 10 nanometers interval. Each sample was scanned four times by physically moving the probe between scans, and obviously we used the NIST white reference standardized method. This is just a schema to better understand. So here we have the 500 samples. So for the first EPO development set, we randomly chose from all the 500, whereas for the second development set, we only chose from the dried ground and re-wetted samples. In general, soil featuring high moisture and clay content obviously had the lower reflectance. So the EPO, in the first part of the image, you can see the first derivative spectra of the development set A1 and A2 for both EPA data sets, and these were used to then compute the projection matrices P1 and P2. You can definitely see in both cases the influence of moisture at about 1400, 500, and 1900 nanometers. I tried to make it easy, the equation. So basically you can see the EPO as having the raw VisNIR spectra with the moisture influence and write it as the useful component. In our case, we chose to improve the prediction of clay, added with the parasitic component, which in this case is moisture, and of course some noise. Then, after we have this equation, we just estimate the projection matrix, the P, and project the spectra. This table shows the distribution of the clay content in the data set. So, for EPO1, A1, C1, and B1, you can see that overall they had a very similar range in clay content. That's because all the data, as I said in the beginning, was randomly selected, but from stratified data. Whereas in the second EPO, where they were totally random, the development set had a much lower clay content than the calibration and validation set. This image represents the principal component space where we projected the data sets, and you can see the general trend before the IPO. Some of the data sets coincide, but they don't overlap. As after we applied the IPO, though, they're way more together. They overlap much better. This is just a visually. It's easier to visualize and explain some of the effects from this. So these are the general results. I didn't put all the statistics we used, but as a general trend, before IPO and after IPO for both of the IPO, the R-square increased slightly, but the root mean square error and the bias decreased, which gave us more confidence that the prediction is accurate. These are just two images of the results of the mineralogy. One of our... So we think that some of the differences in the results can be explained by the fact that we had a wide mineralogy. We had in Constanța, which is a port city, we had carbonate-laden coastal soil, whereas in other parts of Romania we had muscovite and quartz-dominated soils. As two general discussion points, the projection matrix P1 for the first EPO had the combination of both field intact samples and legacy samples that were rewetted with variable moisture content, help reducing the impact of moisture in soil of different aggregate sizes. The second matrix, P2, for the second EPO, suggests that it's not necessary to actually rewet the legacy samples at fixed moisture level. So you can rewet them randomly, basically as in nature. So this ultimately reduces the lab work time. So these two key advancements, the minimization or reduction of soil grinding and the variable rewetting of legacy samples, holds promise to accelerate the soil mapping efforts at the field scale. So as general conclusions, the IPO is useful for lessening the moisture impact on soil Wiesner spectra, and the mixture of field collected samples with variable moisture content and variable rewetted legacy samples can be used to effectively reduce the moisture impact from moist samples involving variable moisture content and natural aggregation. And the IPO approach was effective despite the fact we had a wide range of mineralogy. And I didn't put one last conclusion, which is not scientific, but I have a dream to create one day the tricorder from Star Trek. And this, one of the conclusions is, with this we're one step closer to that. Thank you. Soil after I grind it, I dried it, grind it, and passed it through the sieve. I put the soil in petri dishes, and with deionized water, I randomly wet it. So I just wet this.
But you didn't know the moisture?
No, I did not calculate. That's the point of the second EPO, to basically see if it predicts, if it reduces the moisture content as well as the first EPO. So we know in the future we don't actually have to measure the moisture. So after I wetted them, obviously I covered them and let it homogenize for 2 days. And
Phil Bowman's USDA MRS. Do you think it would benefit by stratifying your data set into different pair materials where you sort of group the mineralogies and build libraries within those morphic surfaces?
That's what I'm looking at right now. I'm trying to to find the mineralogy and the paramaterial of all the samples and try to plot them in relation to my errors, basically, and see if that explains some of the results we took. I think yes. I think definitely mineralogy and moisture affects a lot the readings of the Wiesner.
All right. Thank you very much.